Hello?
Hello, Congressman Lewis?
Yeah, this is John Lewis.
Hi, this is David Rappaport from Palo Alto High School. Thank you for granting the interview, sir.
Yes, happy to do so.
I'd like to introduce you to my students. Say hi to Congressman Lewis.
Hello, how are you? Yeah, I apologize for not being able to talk with you before, and a series of votes just came up, so I don't know how long we'll be able to do it.
Well, let's
Let's start.
Let me just start by asking you I want to talk about something that happened in 1963. Before the legendary remarks made by Dr. King in the March on Washington, your remarks were subject of some controversy. And I'd like to quote from a part of your speech that was edited out. You said, or you wanted to say, "We will take matters into our own hands and create a source of power outside of any national structure that could and would assure us a victory. If any radical social, political, and economic changes are to take place in our society, the people, the masses, must bring them about." You said, "We will march through the South, through the heart of Dixie, the way Sherman did. We shall pursue our own scorched earth policy and burn Jim Crow to the ground nonviolently. We shall crack the South into 1,000 pieces and put them back together in the image of democracy." Sir, how do those words strike you now in 2009?
Well, back in 1963, it was a great deal of rhetoric and a play on words. And here in 2009, those words don't seem to be that radical. They seem to be rather mild. Back then, I was committed to the philosophy and the discipline of nonviolence. And I'm still committed to the philosophy and the discipline of nonviolence. Some people thought those words were inflammatory, but I thought that it was what I like to call militant nonviolent, that you have to be consistent, you have to be persistent, you have to push and pull, you have to find a way to dramatize an issue. And that's what we were trying to do with the marches, with the sit-in, with the Freedom Ride.
I'd like to talk about one of the gentlemen who was on the Freedom Ride with you, a rather unrecognized fellow by the name of Jim Zwerg. I have a picture of Jim Zwerg here that the students are able to see, and there are a good many unsung heroes of the period. Could you tell us something about the man and about the courage that it took for a white man to stand by you in the fight for civil rights?
Jim Zwerg was an exchange student at Fisk University who attended the nonviolent workshops with us. He was from Wisconsin. He had attended a little college called Beloit College. And he decided, as a committed and dedicated person to the cause of an integrated society of what we call the beloved community, a community at peace with itself, that he would become part of an effort to desegregate public transportation. We were seatmate on the bus from Birmingham to Montgomery. And when we arrived in Montgomery, we were met by an angry mob. We were beaten, left bloody. Jim was severely beaten. I was knocked unconscious. We both was left laying in a pool of blood. Jim almost died on that ride. But he said in an interview that somehow, in some way, he was going to get up and make it to Jackson, Mississippi, and on to New Orleans. But what Jim and many other young people did, black and white, led to the desegregation of public transportation all across the American South.
Well, you put your life on the line, as many people did, including your close associate and friend, Dr. King. I wondered if you could just share your thoughts about reflecting on the man, the leader, and the friend.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., I met him when I was 18 years old in 1958. I first heard of him in 1955 when I was 15 years old in the 10th grade. He became a wonderful friend, almost like a big brother, but a wonderful colleague. We worked together. He was so inspiring. He gave us hope in a time of hopelessness. He was able to do what I call bring the dirt and the filth from under the American rug, out of the cracks and out of the corners, into the open light for us to deal with it. I heard him speak so many times, and he inspired me And when I first heard him speaking on the old radio, it seemed like he was speaking directly to me, saying, "John Lewis, you too can do something." And I wanted to meet him. And when I met him, I was ready to put my body on the line. In the sit-ins, and later the Freedom Ride, the March on Washington in 63, the March from Selma to Montgomery. He have changed America forever. And he must be looked upon as one of the founding fathers of the new America. He preached love. He preached nonviolence. He said over and over again that we must learn to live together as brothers and sisters, or we will perish as fools. If it hadn't been for Martin Luther King Jr., hadn't been for Gandhi, there would be no Barack Obama today as president of the United States of America.
Well, let me ask you about the new America. You are among a group of seven members of Congress, along with other co-sponsors, for a bill called the Respect for Marriage Act that would repeal the Defense of Marriage Act. And it involves the denial of rights to gays. That is something that seems to strike a chord with you. Could you speak a little bit about the relationship between that issue and civil rights issues that we're more familiar with?
Well, I worked so long and so hard. You know, I got arrested more than 40 times, beaten, left bloody and unconscious at the Greyhound bus station in Montgomery in May of 61, had a concussion on that bridge in Selma in 65. And I said today, I worked so hard and so long against discrimination based on race and color, not to stand up and speak up and speak out against discrimination based on sexual orientation. And no government, be state or federal, has a right to tell people who they can marry and who they cannot marry. Dr. King used to say, races do not fall in love and get married. Individuals fall in love and get married. At one time in the South, blacks and whites couldn't get married. So if two young people or two middle-aged or older people want to get married, if two men, two women want to get married, they fall in love and want to get married, it's their business. And no one has the right, no government, to infringe on that right.
I wanted to ask you in the brief time we have together about the state of race relations in the United States in 2009. Here we have Congressman Wilson's words still echoing throughout the United States, and we have President Carter just last week making a statement about Congressman Wilson's remarks that support the views held by the Congressional Black Caucus that racism plays a role in his objections, both on the health care issue and his personal objection to the leadership style of Barack Obama. I would ask you, sir, how would you characterize the state of race relations in the United States?
Well, it's without a doubt, we have come a distance. We made a lot of progress. The signs that I saw growing up that said white and colored, white men, colored men, white women, colored women, those signs are gone, and they will not return. People can register and vote. People have been elected to all types of positions, including Barack Obama being elected president. But the scars and stains of racism are still deeply embedded in every corner of American society. We're not there yet. We have not yet created the beloved community. We have not yet created a multiracial society. We still must work every single day, all of us. We must keep in mind that we're one people. We're black, we're white, we're Asian American, we're Latinos, we're Native American, we're gay, we're straight, but we're one people. We're one house, not just American house, not just the American family, but the world family, the world house. We all live in the same house.
Let me ask you as we conclude here, I know you do have to go back to the floor and vote. I'm in a room filled with students here, and you, of course, were a leader of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. What would you suggest to students about their role in getting involved in politics?
Well, I would say to students, get involved. You don't have to wait until you're 21 or 30 or 40 or 45 or 50. Many of us got involved when we were 14 and 15, and some of the children in Birmingham were in their elementary school. And so get involved. Get involved in political campaign. Get involved in activity after school.
Congressman, I'm sorry to interrupt. You have 45 seconds left to vote.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Congressman. I know you have
to go.
I got to go. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.